This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Families are supposed to be our safe place. But what happens when the lines blur so much that loyalty becomes its own kind of prison? That's what we're going to be digging into today. Of course, it's all relating to the world of the Adelsons. We're not here to do a... We're going to be pulling apart the psychology of a meshed family, the idiosyncrasies, the blind spot, and how far loyalty can stretch before it bends into something dangerous. Joining us to discuss, psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott and Stacey and Todd here as well. We're going to be going into unpacking the roots of enmeshment, the fallout it leaves on individuals, and why, in some cases, it can pull people all the way into criminal cover-ups. And I know we've talked a lot about this, Siobhan, but I want to dive even deeper and with kind of a group discussion here today, because I think everybody has different experiences and different stories. How these sort of interactions that I'm sure we've all had in different ways, shapes, and forms, you know, can affect one's life. But let's go all the way back on this. When you look at a family like the Adelsons and you see just how enmeshed they are, it had to start somewhere. Where does this start? Is this something Harvey and Donna get married and then Donna just kind of takes this control? Is this more of a Donna, this is how she's been before Harvey, always will be, with something from her childhood? Was it trauma? What typically do we see in situations like this?
I think it's probably a combination of culture, because families, you know, the family we grow up in influences the way that we interpret how families work. And there are cultures, the Jewish culture being one of them, where a certain degree of enmeshment is considered normal, where kids are expected to fulfill parents, you know, expectations in regards to religion and educational professional status and all of that. Asian families are notoriously that way as well. But then you can have an amplification of that with a personality type who is profoundly narcissistic. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot here about narcissism and where that comes from, combination of genetics and environment. And in that case, the narcissist is somebody, they've always been this way. They've been very self-centered, but they really see that having children is about them and the kids are supposed to meet their needs. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination.
And that's certainly what we see a lot here in the Adelson case. But we do see this a lot. We see families all the time that seem to be tight. There's nothing wrong with having a close family. But you oftentimes also in a tight family, one that may have a certain number to the group, there'll be one or two that are kind of the odd ducks, the ones that don't go along with everything. And that's kind of how it's described. Well, they don't get along with the family. They don't go along with all the things that they do. Is that always an example of an enmeshed family over here and then the odd duck that's calling it out? Or is there differences sometimes? Is there ever a good version of an enmeshed family?
It's fascinating. I look at it on a continuum. On one extreme, you have a disengaged family, and that's a family where the parents are not tuned into the kids. They, you know, they may have some neglect or even benign neglect. They just don't pay a lot of attention to them. And then you have the middle zone where parents are there, they're connected, they're supportive, but they still allow the kids to be independent people and make their own choices as they get older. And then on the other extreme, you have the enmeshed family with the over-involvement where the kids are really tightly controlled. And the healthiest place to be is probably closer to the middle. So when I hear the word enmeshed, I automatically go with that's not really good. It's not really healthy. So you want parents to be connected, attuned, and supportive throughout their kids' lives, right? I've got middle-aged kids, and I'm still, you know, reasonably attuned. We may only talk once a week or once a month. I'm not certainly involved in their lives to any degree, but I'm there if they would need help. And I think that's the role of parents, is to raise independent adults who have their own identity, but we're always there to be supportive in a crisis.
So is this kind of an extension of a helicopter parent, or is this a completely different idea of parenting?
I think a helicopter parent is a really good example of an enmeshed parent.
Okay.
I think that's a newer term, right? We had that, a book that came out about a decade ago, I think, on helicopter parenting, and it was an Asian kind of style. Yeah. And that's, you know, again, some people say, well, you get really high achieving kids from that. You may, but they also may be very anxious and depressed kids. So,
well, and look at the Adelsons. They are high achieving kids. Yes. They are absolutely at the pinnacle of their careers. And yet they are falling from their pedestals as we watch. I mean, just literally their worlds are crumbling. So what good was it? What good did it do?
Mm-hmm. I think it did lots of harm, and especially to this extreme where the loyalty to family trumps any sense of ethics and morality, which, you know, most enmeshed families don't go to this extreme, which is why we find this one so interesting.
And what's interesting about it, too, is when you do have the super high achieving kid, like, oh, look what they've done. It looks great on this. It looks great at the country club when they're out there and they're having their breakfast. Oh, Charlie did this. Oh, Wendy's doing that. Oh, did I mention we have to go pick Wendy up and drive her across the state? And she's a 35-year-old woman because we don't trust her to drive by herself. I mean, there's these bizarre caveats that I'm sure the let's drive Wendy across the state doesn't come up at the coffee clutch, but more so the achievements do. But at the end of the day, you have this totally, I don't want to say totally inept, but a fairly inept adult that isn't capable of acting as an adult at the end of the day, because they know this enmeshment as mom's love, as her caring. It's not looked at as enmeshment. It's not looked at as toxic. It's not looked at as anything bad. So to Wendy, I do you think she even sees any of this as weird or bad, or did see it as weird or bad?
I would guess that she's starting to see it at this point, and probably having to face a lot of things about the way she was raised that she didn't see as weird. She went along with it. And often kids see that to differentiate, to develop their own identity, that is going to bring a terrible response from the parent. And so they hesitate to do it. And so they don't have any insight. They don't see it. But with what's gone on in this situation, my guess is she's done quite a bit of reflecting and probably gotten input from other people who were like, you were not raised in a normal family here.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the root of, like, why do you have the kids not pushing back? There was obviously kids push back on everything. But at some point they learned, not worth it, not going to push back against mom, and it stayed true into adulthood. Where is that? Why is that? What was the flipping point of, I don't want to talk back to mom. I don't want to express my own opinion on anything.
I think they learn it as toddlers, that if, you know, toddlers are famous for trying to push back on their parents. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're in a home where mom gets hysterical or really angry every time you push back on her, these kids are raised to not do that. Now, often if there are multiple kids in the family, you'll have one that does. And that becomes the family scapegoat where, you know, they become sort of the black sheep and they're not meeting the parents' needs. And that's the one that moves across country and just stops talking to them.
Which
And the one that calls them out.
Yes.
Yeah. They don't like that. When you have that going on, you grow up in the environment, you said, you know, it starts as toddlers and you see mom get hysterical and you see her react in such ways that are not congruent to reality. Obviously, that's a big sign of a kind of a distorted reality that they're viewing life in. How often does that then translate into, well, that little girl, it's going to turn out to be a lot like little mom, or even the little boy might turn out to be a lot like mom if they're like literally learning cause and effect. Mom gets hysterical, she gets her way from toddler age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can guess that this is how Donna was raised, and this is sort of the rules of how family is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And so do you replicate this in another generation? They may not, but it's certainly possible that this is their view of you know, mm-hmm. kids are there to meet their parents' needs.
Yeah. I mean, is it just the fear that mom's going to get upset, or if it's a male figure, if dad's going to get upset? Or is it fear of something greater than just them getting mad that drives, I mean, this kind of motive in life to operate that way?
I think it's a fear of losing their love mm-hmm. and not being loyal to the family story, which is we take care of mom's feelings. It's almost like you're going to lose your status, your role in the family, and you lose yourself because you don't have an independent identity. And they're not aware that they're doing this at all.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.